we have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of a Purely Arsenal podcast. It's an early Tuesday morning in England, and I've got James Johnston with me. How are you doing, James?
Yeah, good morning or good evening for yourself. Yeah, good. It's I think it's the first time we've scored four goals since July of last year against Norwich. So yeah, I'm buzzing.
At the Emirates, right? Because we had the West Brom one. Yeah.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah.
But this one, yeah. The good thing about this one was obviously, you know, the West Brom one and Norwich, you get your banished with the old relegation battlers one. And this one was a genuinely dangerous team who we knew were a bit Jekyll and Hyde, right? They'd been bashed six by Man U, and I think they'd lost 3-0 at Tottenham, and they'd had a few sort of heavy defeats, but they've also, you know, gone and won at places like Leicester and things like that comfortably. And so you don't know what you're going to get with them. Listen, we always sort of talk a little bit about the lineup. We're reviewing the Arsenal Leeds game, if you're not aware, and going to talk a little bit about Benfica game coming up on Thursday. We're in a back in a two games a week moment, aren't we, where it feels like there's no respite, and the games are pretty big. I mean, they're getting bigger and bigger as they go, aren't they? So this, we had two disappointing defeats, James, against Wolves and Aston Villa. A lot of us probably felt a little bit hard done by to at least not get one win out of those two, especially with some of the decisions that went against us. This lineup, I think the main talking point for the lineup is probably Pepe being dropped. Obviously, for us anyway, we said Ceballos would come in, or most likely. We expected the back four probably wasn't that surprising, with Gabriel keeping his place. Maybe Holding being dropped out was a little surprise, because that's not really happened all season. So what were your thoughts on Holding being dropped or rested? With him, it's probably fair to say rotated at this point. And also Pepe dropping his place out, obviously in hindsight, correct decisions, very well done. But what were your thoughts initially and when we started the game?
Yeah, so for me, the lineup, I thought it was a big change and a bold move from Mikel Arteta, because if, like you said, he took arguably his most consistent defender, you know, since Gabriel's been taken out, just before Christmas, in Rob Holding. Obviously, I know Gabriel's won all the player of the months, and it's like I said on the last podcast, Mari and Holding, or Holding and Louise, sort of looks like the better partnership. However, Gabriel's the best centre back in the club. So you've got this whole dynamic of, well, surely you have to play the best player, but then you're like, well, no, because he doesn't work with whoever else we've got there with him. But Holding, I think it was more rested than dropped. I know a lot of people said, oh, you know, James, do you reckon this is from what you class as his two mistakes in the last two games, you know, the Wolves and the Villa game? And I'm like, no. Yeah.
Which we discussed, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, no. I'm like, I don't think that comes into it whatsoever, because, you know, I don't want to, where I'm praising Arteta, I feel bad sort of stabbing him in the back now to say, but I'm like, well, no, this guy continuously picks David Luiz after he makes mistakes. So two individual errors, I don't think, justifies being dropped, you know, because we've seen Luiz keep playing after he's made individual errors. And then leaving out Pepe and Lacazette, again, I think it's a case of possibly resting them and saving them for Thursday. And it was like we said, it was a big move, because they're the two, you know, highest goal contribution players currently, and on current form, they're the best, you know, two attacking players along with Saka that we have. And Aubameyang, you know, was out of form, obviously, with everything that happened. Obviously, he had the good run of the, what was it, four in his last five at the Emirates or something. He was going into that game.
Yeah, but he's been injured in between. Yeah. Obviously, family issues and stuff like that.
Exactly, but what I really enjoyed, especially with this new system, and it's a system I think can work going forward, is that Aubameyang didn't really have his back to goal, didn't have to drop deep and create, like, Lacazette does. It was just a case of, let's put all of our good technical players on and in this, you know, formation and system and what have you, and just feed him. Just feed him nice, intricate to feet, what he wants, service, so that he can provide. And got a hat-trick, didn't he? Do you know what I mean? It's the best way I can describe it. I think that's a good alternative system that we can use going forward to help, like you said, with these two games every week. You know, hopefully it will be more than just this week, because we beat Benfica. So if it goes back to just one a week again, and then do whatever you want. But yeah, once yeah. it's a two, yeah, rotate. Yeah,
yeah. And rotate. It's just, what's interesting is, like you said, it's not really worked with Aubameyang. Let's stick with Aubameyang. So it's not really worked with Aubameyang centrally under Mikel Arteta.
Yeah.
Really, has it? I mean, the last time he played it, I think was we did it against Leeds away.
Yeah.
And obviously it was Willock behind, and then we had to send him off. But we really didn't, even before the send off, we weren't really creating a lot from it. And throughout this whole season, I know his stats are pretty similar from the left as opposed to centrally, I think, over his career in terms of goals. But what the biggest concern was this season was, obviously, he looked off form, in fairness to Aubameyang. He did look, I mean, he looks completely different from minute one from this game. He looked like he was back to his old self. And I don't think that was really to do necessarily all to do with the who we had initially anyway to play around. I felt like his attitude was different. I felt he was so much more, his overall play beyond the three goals and the chances he had, I thought was really good. Do you know what I mean? Outside the box.
He was running and getting involved, wasn't he? Like, yeah. He had a point to prove.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the area we've not always, but at times gone back to questioning. When the goals have run dry, our lights just went on, by the way. Did you notice that?
Did you see that?
But after... after our, when the goals run dry with him, we start looking at the overall play, and we said, well, not, he doesn't offer a ton, you know, if we're not getting him to finishing chances. But I think his XG was like, our overall team XG was something like 2.5, but his individual XG was even more than Leeds's overall. I mean, he had the three goals, but then he had the one that hit the bar. He had the block from Ayling, which was going in, wasn't it, from the Saka cutback. So like you said, it was literally, I felt, the game from Arteta, and the sort of target was to basically focal around him and making sure he got into goal scoring opportunities, because you know that if you give him five or six, he will probably put away two or three. Do you know what I mean? He is a one in two finisher. I mean, that's proven throughout his career. We know that's where he is elite, right? So I thought that was really, really interesting. What were your thoughts on, I mean, a little bit unlucky, wasn't it, for Pepe? I mean, it was the right call in the end, because the way we played, and it looked like it was, that they are a different team, aren't they, Leeds? Because they're very sort of man for man, aren't they? That his system is like man for man. So if you're able to do one man, you almost take their plan out of the equation. And then they also had a big injury, didn't they, to their defensive midfielder. Who is it? Calvin Phillips, is it?
Yeah. Fantastic player as well.
Yeah. And I didn't realise how important he was for him, because I haven't watched him enough. But when I saw the team sheet, I did look at his name, because I heard a lot about him. But he ticks
them over, mate. They called him Yorkshire Perlow, didn't they? Because he literally ticks them going.
And that was obviously a big miss for them, so we've got to take that into account as well. But I think, you know, I mean, we dominated from the get-go, really. And then the first goal was it really was Aubameyang of old, just again, looked so much more fluid on the ball, didn't he? And obviously you can argue with a goalkeeper, but again, it was good of him, because everyone expects him to cut inside and whip it to far post, don't they, from what he's done all last season. So it was good to see that switch up, I thought, and just cut in, try to go near post. And I think it took the goalkeeper away. I've always felt, I know the goalkeeper's young, so I'm sure he's got a lot of potential, but even playing at Leeds, I remember watching that game and thinking, he is dodgy. Do you know what I mean? At times he looks I'm a little sceptical of him, and we never tested him at all, really, at Leeds, until Saka came on, from what I remember. But really good, mate, to see that first goal. And then the other two, I'm trying to remember them now. There it is, me talking about him not being able to head the ball. And he goes and scores header, and then obviously puts the pen away. But what were your thoughts on the three goals overall, mate?
Yeah, so just quick to touch on your Pepe question that you asked a minute ago. For me, I think we've talked about the emotional side of Nicolas Pepe. I think that's a player that needs to know he's loved. I think obviously the price tag and then the adjustment, even though I thought he did brilliantly last season, you know, I'm a huge fan of the guy. I know I've got a lot of pelters for being a huge fan of the guy.
Actually, I think we, on this podcast, we both kind of, we've never thrown the towel in on him.
No.
Even, and a lot of people have, let's face it. We did on other people and that came back and played but I don't think what either of us did on Pepe. Sorry, Karen.
Yeah, no, so I think he looked at it and was just like, right, Alioski's obviously out there. He's gone for you all week. You know, you've seen the comments coming about you. And he probably thought he might emotionally lapse again, because if he was playing, they would be trying to wind him up because they know, look, we've got him before. Maybe we can get him sent off again. So I think he, as well as saying earlier that he was rested, I think Mikel Arteta protected him and was just like, look, I'm not going to put you in the cauldron. You know, if I need you, I'll potentially bring you on. If we, you know, if we were caught stuck, I reckon he probably would have been the first sub made. But we were in the ascendancy, so he was just like, look, just sit there and watch. And when he was warming up and Alioski got taken off, he had to walk straight past. He's sort of like, you know, nice little hello. It's like, oh yeah, nice to see you again, by the way. Yeah, 4-0 down. How's it going, you know? But yeah, no, in terms of the three goals, the first one, Gabriel, brilliant playing out from the back. He starts the move off, gives it to Granit Xhaka. Xhaka puts it on a plate for Aubameyang. And then, like you said,
it's a lovely little touch from Smith Rowe, I think, before. Yes. Smith Rowe's involved in 3 of the 4, I want to say.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the lines.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, he drifts in from that left. He does the step overs, and you think he's going to whip it like the Fulham one and the one in the chair, Community Shield and everything else. And no, he hammers it into the other side. And like you said, the goalkeeper should do better for me. The centre-backs haven't helped him. Let's be fair, them two haven't helped him at all. But yeah, really, really nice goal. But before the second penalty, I want to touch, if I can, on the first one.
Yes, let's do that. I was, well, not surprised, but stunned that they made him go over to the camera. Where were you with it?
Jack, mate, honestly, how many more weeks are we going to have to sit here and talk about stuff like that? It's a 100% penalty for me. It's ludicrous. He comes across Saka, makes no attempt to play the ball. Saka is running at speed, I might add. You know, it's not as bad in a way as that Villa decision, because, you know, that was further back. So for me, I think now when these players are running at momentum and they do get taken out, I think for player protection, they should be sent off. Look at, I go back to years and years back, the Debuchy one with Arnautović, where he shoved him. Debuchy sprinting, and he popped his shoulder out, didn't he, from doing that? I'm like, that's a straight red card. I'm sorry, that's violent play. If you're just completely tussling someone over that's running at speed, for me, that's a red card. That's a red card. But he's deemed that there's contact and given a penalty. He goes over to the monitor and he's like, well, no, it's no penalty because the contact that's made soft. So I'm like, well, then you've deemed that Saka simulated and he's diddled you. Like you.
They never do that, do they?
But I'm like, if there's no contact to justify the penalty, then Saka in your mind has dived. So you have to book him. And if he did book him, that wouldn't annoy me, because I'm like, well, no, he's following. So I'm like, if you've deemed that there's contact there, then it's a penalty, isn't it? It just doesn't make sense. And again, it just screams of this inconsistency, which is just.
I think
I don't understand.
The most incredible thing to me from this particular one, and we feel like we're going over VAR and referees every week. So, but there was two great things about it irrespective of what ended up being the decision, the one great thing was the move, right? I mean, Saka and Odegaard was what a lovely little 1-2, and Saka's run was unbelievable, wasn't it? But again, you watch that and you go, yeah, well, that's Bukayo Saka, he does it all the time. But he, I mean, it is unbelievable. The second thing is Saka's reaction, right? Because the last two games, what we've said is we've been unjust with decisions, but we haven't liked our players' reactions. They felt a little bit sorry for themselves, moaned about it after the game. And if every player could have Bukayo Saka's sort of mentality of, and he's literally looking, I'm watching, I mean, my camera's zooming on Saka's face when they're waiting to make the VAR decision. And Saka's like, what? He just can't believe you've even gone over to look at it. He's like, what are you talking about? And I don't know why there's a clip going around going, look, he contacted his Saka's leg. It doesn't matter. He's literally bundled him over because Saka's running in this direction and the other guy's just going across his body. So it doesn't really matter where he's made the contact. He's completely cut his path away. So I think it's ludicrous to turn it over. It's unbelievable, but really, I hate encouraged by the reaction.
Yeah, I hate going back to it, but they claim the VAR is there to help the refs when it's not clear and obvious. I'm like, how can you watch that and say that he's, oh, it's not clear and obvious whether he's made an attempt. There's no attempt to win the ball. So it's a foul. I'm like, what? I'm sorry, but I'm like, what is wrong with all of you? Like, what is, I mean, it was Anthony Taylor, I believe, doing the VAR anyway. So he hates Arsenal. You know, he's the guy who sends off Xhaka for just breathing, doesn't he?
I mean, yeah. I mean, the Bamford one.
Penalty.
You thought Bamford. So there's consistency there, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
So I just wanted to check on that.
Their fans should have been, if they're not, you know, because I don't pay attention to Leeds fans. nothing against them. I just don't follow any.
I've got one good mate. He's a brilliant bloke as well, but I'm like, you sure you're a Leeds fan? You're a lovely chap.
Yeah. One of my old bosses was a Leeds fan. He's one of the only ones I know. I'm like that's daylight robbery. That Cedric and Gabriel make no attempt to win the ball there, and they sandwich the geezer. Yeah. I'm like, Bamford's all. I'm like, that's 100% a penalty as well. So, like we always say on this podcast, we'll call it how we see it. So I've got no qualms in saying when Arsenal do something and they're like, well, we're lucky there.
Yeah.
You know, we mentioned it with Mari last week about how he potentially should have been sent off against Chelsea.
Yeah, we spoke about the Gabriel one.
Yeah, very, very lucky boy.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, no, that Bamford one's a penalty as well. But then the second, like you said, Saka in that first 60 minutes, his driving determination, mate, is unbelievable. I mean, he completely twisted him up, you know, no ends up, and he's just a superb player. I mean, is it tough that we are being carried by kids at the moment, and how long can that last for? It's a very, very good question, because this guy's got everything. The only thing that I think he lacks is more goals. That's it.
He's been really unlucky, James. Have you seen since he's played right wing? I don't know if you saw someone post that table. Did you see it? So since he's played right wing, he's played 11 games at right wing, right? 1, 2, 3. Sorry to cut you off, 9. Yeah, 11 games. So he's scored 5, created 4. Mm. But within that, yeah, because if you win a penalty, it's a creation, isn't it? So this game, you got 1 assist.
Yeah.
But really, he's created another one there. And then against Wolves, he's so unlucky to get that goal disallowed. I know it is offside, but it's nothing to do with anything he does at all. So, you know, he's from the right wing. I mean, we thought he was great from anywhere, to be honest. So he's taking himself to another level. But I do agree with you. I think he's on the cusp of being... I think he's on the cusp of being like a 15 to 20 goal a season player. I really do. I think he's so, because I think his final ball is so good, whether it's a cross or a shot. I think he's been quite unlucky. You know, the shot against the post against Wolves.
Yeah.
I think he's been quite unlucky. You know what I mean? He would have scored against Villa probably.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to overly hype the player, because I don't think you can at the moment. However, I look at it in the same way that Raheem Sterling sort of developed. So Sterling come onto the scene and you saw, okay, he's got good natural quality. Like, even when he was making sporadic sort of appearances for Liverpool, then obviously he had the season with Rodgers where they went close and everything, and you're like, whoa, yeah. Then when he went to City, And I think it was two seasons ago, wasn't it, where he got like the 20 plus goals. And there were some games where he did play up front as well, because obviously Aguero was injured and they do like the false. And I'm like, if we can get him to that level where his finishing improves, yeah, like you've said, he is going to get 15 to 20, if not goals on their own, goals and assists. Like he will, you know, you say, okay, from when I used to watch Arsenal as a kid, we were quite spoiled, but I'm talking about when you had the Perez's and the Lundbergs and everything, you were like, right, you need to get me 8 goals, 12 to 15 assists and balance it out. Like, and they done it every season solid. And then you had Henry and you had everyone else. So, I mean, you alluded to it the last podcast. What was it, 20, 25 in 23 games or something, the goals? How ridiculously little the amount of goals we've scored all season.
Oh, yeah, 27, 23, yeah.
27, 23, yeah. Sorry. Yeah,
31 in 24 now. Looks a little bit better.
Yeah. So I'm like, the more and more they get him on the ball and more they do things, the more they're going to, and when he adds the finishing, he will be creme de la. I mean, I think he's special now, but he'll go to that next, wherever that next zenith is, that's where he'll be. And he's chasing a lost cause there to get that penalty. And the Melier, like you said, he makes a silly decision, clatters into him, and then the ref can't deny that one. But again, for me, I've got to have a whinge here, mate. He's the last man, and it's, again, no attempt to win the ball, and it's serious foul play in the box. So if he's not sent off, he at least needs to be booked. However, they apply the double jeopardy here, but they didn't apply it at Wolves.
Yeah, I think the only reason I said booking, I was annoyed as well because I wanted to book him. But the reason I said that was because I felt Bukayo Saka's body was really sort of pushing the ball away from goal. And I figured that was what covered him. So I said, but at the very least, again, it is odd. You know what I mean? Like, goalkeeper makes a foul like that, doesn't get booked, and it's a penalty. Mm. Leno does what he does, straight sending off. You know what I mean? I mean, the argument there is, you know, which one's a more goal scoring opportunity, and you'd have to say it's really 50-50 at that point. Saka right there with the ball, and or a ball that we don't know could fly into for a goal kick, to be honest. So I again, like you said, when you look at it and across, especially what we've received over the last month, it's a bit baffling. It's absolutely baffling that he didn't get any card. But again, you know, no, I'll go back to, because we could go on and on about a joke that VAR and refs have dealt with. I just really liked how we as a collective kind of reacted to it. And at the end of it, we are talking about it, but you're not, the players aren't, the club isn't. Do you know what I mean? They knew that we had so much more to offer in this game, and we weren't going to let our chances go like we did against Wolves. And at the moment, we shouldn't have to always rely on that. And I think sometimes we're not good enough to rely always on that. And that's what we're seeing. And that's what's frustrating, that we don't get the decisions that go our way sometimes. But again, like you said, I think that was indicative of the press that we were trying to do, which is something Leeds have been credited for, isn't it, really? Is that, you know, their ability to press high and you know, high energy. But we basically played them at their own game, didn't we? And like you said, Bielsa said at the end of the game that he couldn't really handle us. And on the third, Saka, again, massively involved, basically takes on about 6 players before laying it off. And then Smith-Rowe's involved heavily again, and Sabas creates one for Bellerin. I think a goalkeeper can do better again, to be honest.
Yeah,
Can't be beating at your near post, but it's a great move. Talking about Sabas, mate, because I think a lot of us had said Partey and Xhaka had built up a really strong partnership. But are we forgetting that Danny Ceballos has still something to offer, and also probably has a lot of motivation here with trying to get in the Euro squad if the Euros is to go ahead, and knowing that his loan spell is coming to a close, and maybe if he does always seem like he wants to go back to Real Madrid, to be fair, but you know, maybe realising that, you know, that's not necessarily the best thing for him, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's one of those where I'm like, would I buy him permanently? I'm still unsure. However, there is clear quality in there. It's just, it comes back again to what I've always said about the mobility. And you saw at the end of that game that them two were both, you know, wearing out, especially when it got cagey and he had to put the third body in there to stop it from being overrun. So, but in terms of everything else, when you're looking at the system that we've got going forward with, especially the rumours about Partey, you know, there's horrible stuff about he could be out for the season now, he could be out for this long, he could be out for that long. He is the best option because we need to get higher up the pitch quicker and feed quicker the attacking players. And I've always said, if you need to win the ball in the upper third, Dani Ceballos is brilliant at it. That's the one thing where I'm like, that guy's got it. Because he's a tenacious guy. I'll give him that. The passion as well. You know, when Bellerin scores his goal, you can see, I think Neil put the video on Twitter in the little corner. He's giving it, he's proper jumping up, giving it big. And it's a nice little assist through the defender's leg.
He's got that in his locker, to be fair.
Yeah, if you're gonna do one, that's the sort of one. If you're gonna get an assist, that's the sort of assist you want, where you nutmeg your opponent. So, yeah, I mean, he just slots in there nicely at the moment with what we need and what we need to be doing, especially with Partey out. So, you know, what we lose in the athleticism and the mobility, and maybe in the more shoring up defensively, he's helping us offensively. And again, it comes back to that balance where Arteta has improved us defensively, but it's sacrificed the attacking play. And now it's sort of just coming.
Yeah, full circle almost.
Yeah, but it's like there's an imbalance either way.
I'm still sort of on the fence a little bit because we've not really seen Xhaka and Ceballos work in a back four until this game, and we haven't really seen Aubameyang work centrally in this game. So what we look at is
a great point.
Is this a blueprint for, you know, sort of future games? But again, Leeds are quite a unique team. Do you know what I mean? So they play in a way that's, they be able to set them up in a very, very different
what
way.
What I will say as well is at the end of that first half, only Saka and Gabriel didn't create a chance or take a shot. So that again leads into that this system that Arteta fed full credit for, because he picked it to start with, has got something about it. You know, all eight of the other outfield players, barring Gabriel Saka, had a shot or created something. Mm. Now, is that because the system's so good, or is that because Leeds are just an absolutely mental team?
Yeah, exactly.
We know them on the day. For me, I think it's a bit of both. I do think it's a bit of both. I think that system is, like you said, a blueprint to go for. You know, I'm not doing full storms. I don't think, you know, we're gonna win the league. I'm not saying we're gonna win Thursday. City will bottle it to us at the weekend, and then we're gonna catch them. But
never know. You never know.
This system for me, I think it's a goer. I think it's something that you can do.
I mean, it's definitely true with Dani Ceballos when he's good. I mean, he's all energy, he's all involved, he's always on the ball when he's good. And then when he's not, he just looks like he's slow and he's inagile and he's way off the pace and people getting in behind him. But this is the way you need to play if you're going to get the best out of him. You have to play quite front-footed and higher press because, like you said, he is quite good at winning the ball back. He is quite good at anticipating where the ball's going to go and winning it back. Even though he doesn't have a lot of pace about him, he's good in the tackle. He wins a lot of challenges, to be fair, Dani Ceballos. And he can thread a pass. And I think that was really good to see, wasn't it? Because we've been so much a team that has gone, when in doubt, gone outside to try to get balls in. And in this game, it was much more about threading balls. And I just wanted to know your thoughts on the play and the combination of Odegaard and Smith Rowe. We know Smith Rowe can play from the left because he's played from the left for us before in years gone by in Europa League and at youth level. Odegaard, we know, can play from the right a little bit more, but we knew that wasn't going to happen with, probably the best youngster in the league at the moment playing out there alongside Foden. And then what were your thoughts on playing the pair of them? Because when we bought Odegaard, we felt, though it was possible, we probably felt it was there to share the load with Smith Rowe.
Yeah.
So I just wondered if you thought that is something that we'll see more of.
Yeah, I thought they were both brilliant. I mean, I've not watched a lot of Odegaard anyway before he signed, because La Liga's not on as much anymore over here now. They've stripped it from Sky and it's on a subscription service, and I'm like, I'm already paying out my nose for everything else, so I'm not buying another one.
I know what you mean.
From everything you read and from the little compilations that everyone puts on YouTube or puts on Twitter and everything else, you saw, okay, this is a very tidy player. It's got a bit about him and everything else. And he had that opportunity in the second half, didn't he? I thought he should have scored it, Odegaard. He hit one straight into Melier, didn't he, in the second half? He was one on one.
I'm trying to remember it. Yes.
Oh, my, he should have scored that. But everything else, I'm like, no. Okay, so you can see why we've got him in and everything. He possesses that technical quality. And yeah, them two will always work together. The thing is, they're all good players, but the way the system was and everything else beforehand hasn't allowed them to be as, you know, express it. And we wasted a lot of the year, like we've spoken about, and we're probably going to touch on in a minute, on playing people in systems that you knew were never going to work, but we stuck with them. Now you've got something that is working. Stick with that and keep these players. That's the thing. I was saying it for weeks. All these people are feeders. So put them with the players that, you know, put them with the goal scorers, and they're just going to connect, like, you know, they're just going to go together. And yeah, them two can play together more and more, because they're both two very good technical players. I mean, if you want to touch on Smith Rowe, he had 88% pass accuracy out of 34 touches. He made 3 clearances. He made 3 touches in their box, recovered the ball twice, created 2 chances, had 1 interception, and he had 1 assist. And for that fourth goal, for me, I think it's a cross.
What do you think about his tweet then? Did you see his tweet?
I think he's trolling, mate. I think he's baiting people.
Yeah, because it's weird. I felt
bit like Saka.
I thought Saka meant it as well, but this one I felt he meant it more, because there's an angle of it where it really looks like, unless he's looking at Aubameyang when he makes the pass, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I guess we'll never know truly. But it's a fantastic.
His shooting's not that off for me, even though he's still relatively new to the side in terms of first. I'm like, he ain't that much of a fluffer to fluff it.
We need
bad.
To post the youth shot. Do you remember the youth shot that he whips like
yes.
a Carlos?
Yes.
Go, yeah. Of course, he didn't mean to cross it.
Yeah. I saw old Joe Laguna mention you in a Aubameyang and headers. It's a good, it was a good
I do it all the time, don't I? Hey. I didn't even think about it when it happened. I was just like, great goal. And then afterwards, I went, did he score it today? He did score it. And I stand by it, though. He's absolutely useless in the air. It's only because he hit him on the head. But no, it's a great finish. It's a good, getting Aubameyang.
First Arsenal hat-trick for 3 years. Oh, my bloody hell, it's been that long.
In the league, right?
Yeah.
That's his first one in the league, isn't it?
Yeah, his first Aubameyang hat-trick. But yeah, first hat-trick in the league since Aaron Ramsey, I think it was against Everton.
He did get one away at Valencia, but that was obviously in Europa League, didn't he? Okay. Oh, wow. So first one it's good, isn't it? Because he's, I mean, that puts him almost top goal scorer for us this season if he gets
going. And you know what? It was a brilliant, a lot. I do point the finger and go, you know, when we lose, he's never there. But when he seems to win, he's all. But
he's got the mic, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He took the mic before the game ended, didn't he?
Yeah. He gave a brilliant post game for me. And you could see that he was nearly welling up. And do you know what? I'm like, come on. I'm like, this is the time we need you. You done it for us last year. You carried us through a cup run and everything else in the semi and the fight. I'm like, come on, mate, cement it.
If he can hit form, like the form then, because we really missed it, haven't we? We've really missed his form. Mm. And what we know about, we still talk about Pepe having a bit of output and Laka having a bit of output. None of them have had the output that he's had over the last 3 years. So we know potentially he has so much more to give. And if a central option, and I like you, I don't think he's always going to use Aubameyang centrally. I see still see Laka coming back in and Aubameyang being shifted out to the left, certainly probably when Tierney returns anyway, because he's providing that overlap and allowing Aubameyang to filter inside more like he likes to do. But I thought Smith Rowe was, but again, Smith Rowe is just because he was more all action than Odegaard, wasn't he? He was more eye catching because his involvement was there. But it is quite amazing to think how important in such a short space of time he's become to this team, really. I mean, it was very easy for him to bring Odegaard in and just drop Smith Rowe, wasn't it? But he didn't do that, though I sense that might be coming because he really needs some rest in his legs. But he clearly thinks Smith Rowe, you know, is absolutely key to the way this team sort of functions in an attacking sense. And I think a lot of the press comes from, obviously it comes from Saka because he's just so fast, but I think a lot of it does come from Smith Rowe. He often, even in this game, found himself in that central position, the highest one up when Aubameyang would drop off left. And I quite like the interchange between the four of them, to be honest.
Yeah.
It was really nice to see, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah, so after that, so after the 4-0, then I don't want to say then comes the terrible stuff because we still created after that. I think Aubameyang hit a bar after that, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
And we probably should have gone 5, but then said this about this team for a while, a little bit about us not being able to play for full 90-minute periods, and it was a little disappointing. Is there, for the two goals, certainly for the first one, it's a great header. Should Saka be doing better there?
For me, first and foremost, it's a mismatch to begin with. I don't know why Saka's on that guy to begin with. But for me, I saw a lot of people giving pelters to David Luiz. And I'm like, no, I'm like, you can't. I'm like, that is a corner that I wish Arsenal take and an excellent header. I'm like, it's a really, really brilliant header. And I'm like, I don't blame either of them for it, really, in my opinion. Personally, I'm like, that's just a brilliant set piece and a brilliant header. You can't do nothing. You can't really do anything about that. It's just maybe not have Saka on that guy to begin with. That's the only thing, is maybe swap that around. But no, I saw a lot of pelters going into Luiz and everything, and I was like, you can't blame him for that. I'm like, that's just a bullet header. It's a really, really good header. And then if you want to touch on the second, it's Bellerin getting caught out again.
A couple of times before.
Yeah, that. Yeah. But it's, you know, you see the good and you see the bad of him. And he gets done and it comes in and it's, you know, easy little slot across the bottom. I mean, Granit Xhaka, when he tries to make the slide and everything else, the minute the ball's in the net, he instantly turns. He gives Bellerin a skinful.
Does he really?
Oh yeah, watch it back. He goes ballisto at him, absolutely ballisto, and rightfully so as well. Rightfully so,
because
we keep saying it. You got to engage and stop it at source. No, I mean no. Don't do silly fouls and give the penalties away. But you got to stop that from coming in and engage and. They just drop off, give them. You know, sometimes I've said some of these wingers must think, bloody hell, look at the space I'm being given. I can't believe how much space Arsenal are giving me. You know, look at what I've got, like the M25 to run down at times, you know. I've got complete loads of space. But again, like you said, it's the management and the timing. And on the 62nd minute, Smith Rowe goes off, which is rightfully so. He's done his job for the day with 4-0 up, and he brings on Willian. Now, I do not blame Willian for both these goals. However, what I do blame is with bringing him on, he completely shifts the tempo that we were in the ascendancy. And then for that last 28 minutes, it all changed and become more nervous. And Smith Rowe lost the ball 6 times in 62 minutes. Willian lost it 6 times in 6 minutes. And in those 6 minutes, we conceded 2 goals. And like I said, he's not at fault for either of the goals. It's just his entire play when he comes on ruins everything that we had going forward. And you alluded to it, other people have alluded to it. That was his first marquee signing in his proper transfer. Okay, he had the January, but I'm talking about his first proper transfer window. You know, in January, it was a case of he was like, fuck, I just need bodies. Let's get bodies. In the summer, I think, obviously, he probably wanted an attacking player. And they were like, look, we can't give you the money for this. We can't give you the money for that. You want more money for the midfielder. You want more money for, you know, he wanted Aouar and got told, no, look, you're getting Partey. But they were like, look, Willian's here and da-da-da-da-da, he can do this. Look at his stats for Chelsea. And he went, oh, okay then. And it was a gamble. But it's a gamble that he's so desperate to pay off. Because I think he wants his I told you so moment. I think he's waiting for the game where maybe Willian does hit that free kick in. Maybe he does score a goal. Maybe he does win a pet, you know. He does something. So he can go, I've told you for weeks, Willian, you know. And I'm like, you might get that moment, but it doesn't look very like, for me, the guy is finished. The guy looks completely finished. And we got 3 more years of it. I'm like,
The concern, I mean, I liken to it to like an ego pride thing with Mikel Arteta, and which I'm not just blaming him for. I mean, Wenger had it with players, right? He stuck with players for too long, and we felt he should have, you know.
Vieira said it, didn't he, in that documentary?
Loyalty, yeah, of course. Yeah, loyalty.
What's Wenger's biggest weakness? He's trusting his players. Yeah. What's his biggest strength? He's trusting his players.
Yeah, exactly. And so in that sense, I don't blame him for it. And I think I'd be less frustrated if there was no other option, but right now there is so many good options to bring off the bench in that position. And one of them has pretty much just, I mean, you've been praising for how much of a U-turn he's made in the last 3 or 4 weeks, in terms of not just going forward, in terms of defensive recoveries, ball recoveries. So it's really odd that you don't trust him to come on for those 30 minutes. Like you said, it could have just been resting him. But then if it is, then go ahead and put your faith in one of our wonder kids that's sitting on the bench, like Martinelli, to keep the energy high, because you know the game's over. Do you know what I mean? And I my biggest frustration was I don't know what he wanted to achieve from that. And I think it sends the most wrong message to the two that sat on the bench for the 90. I just think it sends the wrong message to both of them. And we spoke earlier in the season about the mishandling of Pepe. And as bad as Pepe has been, he has to take some criticism for, well, not as bad, but for not quite hitting the heights this season. Yeah. But he's been really poorly handled. And basically because of this player coming in and taking his place for what I believe was an unfair reason, because it was based on what he'd done at other clubs, not what he's achieved and won, and not what he'd done in an Arsenal shirt. And I thought that was bad mismanagement from Mikel Arteta. And I that's what I'm seeing again. And I think we're seeing improvement, aren't we, from Mikel Arteta in a lot of things, in the way we're playing. We're definitely far more exciting to watch. I was watching Sunday, and I was sitting there going, no, I'm really enjoying watching us here. Obviously, it's easy to say when you're 4-0 up, but just some of the football, you know, I was really enjoying the football. And I said the same during the Wolves game, and that was a far, far away in December. It didn't feel like that was close to seeing those kind of games. So full credit. But on the substitutions front, I'm still a little frustrated. I think he makes the wrong ones at the wrong time sometimes. And I think this one was just unnecessary. I don't really see what it was going to achieve.
In terms of the man management and the subs, for me, I feel he's gotten wrong for a long time, because it just reeks of desperation. So it's either, right, okay, I'm desperate for Willian to work out, so I'm going to keep chucking him on. But there are times as well where, and in other games, where we're winning, but it's still quite nervy, but it's like, chuck every single defender on, just see it out. Or we're chasing a game and we're losing, chuck all the forwards. You know, look at Aston Villa. I'm like, you had people just playing wherever. I'm like, Pepe swapped the wings, which shouldn't have happened. You had Smith Rowe playing as like an 8 in the centre of the midfield, and he had little to no game left in his legs. He should have gone off, and Ceballos should have come on there. And that's the only problem that I have with him. at the moment. And again, it's the inexperience thing. And added to that is it's the people around him. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. The majority of the people that he is surrounded by are losers and failures. You know, people seem to forget that Steve Round was McLaren's right-hand man at England. And look at what happened there. You know, the Wally with the Brolly and everything else like that. You know, he had, you know, okay, I don't blame McLaren as much as some of the other England managers, but they had arguably some of the best ink players of a generation and they couldn't get a tune out of any of them. You know, it's a mess. It's that in-game management and the subs are a mess. And okay, on Thursday, he gets to have five of them. So he's got more, you know, there's more opportunities to bring the player. Because people go, oh yeah, but you're only moaning because he doesn't bring on the players that you like or you want. I'm like, no, I've got no problem with it if I can see what the plan is. But most of the time, it just reeks of desperation. I mean, the Elneny sub, I said earlier, I understood to an extent because I'm like, yeah, he's getting overdone in the midfield, chuck the body in. But then the Rob Holding one, again, I'm like, well, no, he's panicking that we might concede again, so he's throwing on the extra defender when, theoretically, you put the attacking player on, we could have gone up the other end and done him. Because that's the thing with Bielsa. Yeah. For all that he's great, he ain't swapping his principle for nobody. So they're only going to play one way, and they were always going to overcommit. So if you had the Martinelli and everything else, he was in. And against that goalkeeper, I'm picking Martinelli over that Melier. Most, you know,
yeah,
6 to 7 days of the week, I'm going to pick Martinelli over him.
I don't like the third centre back when we're two goals up. I don't like that. I think that's a negative sort of that just invites pressure. I didn't see the need in it. We didn't really trouble ourselves, but it concerns me with two leg games, you know, because in two leg games you don't have this opportunity to make these mistakes, and subs can make a really big impact. So you make the mistakes in the subs, it can really cost you and you're out of the tie. Do you know what I mean? So I think it does
concern me. I just think he's very fortunate, like I said, that he's got five. He's got five there for those games.
Yeah, the true. And I wouldn't be majorly, I mean, a lot of people just, you know, on the Twitter feeds, you know, absolutely concerned about Arteta not having faith in Martinelli. But I think, though that might be true, I'm not sure yet. I think currently I wouldn't be too concerned about that, just simply because his injuries recently have been like one on top of the other on top of the other. And usually even for Arsenal's physio team, when it happens a couple of times, like it is with Tierney and Partey, they kind of take a step back and they go, okay, let's just hold on a minute here. Maybe have him on the bench for a couple of weeks, but don't need him. Use him unless you absolutely need him, kind of thing. So I'd be just a little bit wary, because Martinelli only plays at one speed, which is, you know, 110%, isn't it? So I think a little bit cautious at the moment with Martinelli, I presume, is what's happening. And I wouldn't be that concerned about him not featuring that much yet. And I expect he probably will feature over this next 2 weeks with these runner games anyway at some point. And with Pepe, I didn't really feel, as I saw the game more, that he was truly dropped. Because again, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't start one of the next two, Pepe. Because I think that he will rotate him back in. I think at the very least, the trust has developed there again for him to be part of that first team sort of selection decision, at least. So, but overall, 4-2. I mean, a little bit annoyed that we didn't keep a clean sheet, but again, like you said, the first header, not a load you can do about it. Second, poor defensively from Bellerin. But you know, in the end, I mean, we were all saying we were kind of dreading the game, weren't we? I mean, Mike had 2-1 on Payne, didn't he? And I thought we got away with it, and then the second goal for them went in. I went, okay, Payne's right in my chest and in my back at the moment, and there was the pain coming through.
So I mean, if they got that penalty shout
on Bamford, it was a 4-2,
and it went to 4-3, I think we'd have bottled it.
Yeah, it would have been Newcastle all over again.
I reckon we'd have bottled it.
Should we just I thought the one other player, what I thought Cedric did quite well again.
Yes, he did.
But I thought Gabriel had a really good game. I thought he was very front-footed. I thought he was very good and dominant on the ball. He won his challenges well. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really nice to see, James, because he looked really rusty since he's come back. And again, I struggle to know whether it's just him finding his feet again, or part of me starts to think that he doesn't really play very well with Rob Holding in the two.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? Because when he was playing, in fairness, when he won a lot of those Player of the Months, a lot of that was in a back three with Tierney on the other side of himself.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it was.
It feels like another flipping season. But it was. So I wonder whether what we're looking at here is is it Luis and Gabriel, or is it Holding and Mahari? Do you know what I mean?
Who's really the best? Yeah.
But like you said, it is a game of partnerships. But I think, are you concerned? My real question is, are you concerned that he doesn't know his best two? Because most sides that are consistent need to know their best two centre backs.
Yeah. That's a fantastic question.
I'm a little worried about it.
Yeah, I wasn't until you've brought it up now.
I don't know anywhere else that it works where you just rotate the back four all the time.
That's a fantastic question, mate.
And then, of course, you've got the rumours about Luis signing an extension that starts to throw into the mind that maybe he does see Luis as part of his first team, first two.
It's a case of, because I still think Holding needs to be in there as an option. Even as a squad player, I still think he's done enough to justify being in there. He's done enough to justify his new contract, in my opinion. But it's finding that right-footed partner that can go next to Gabriel and isn't, 33. Is maybe younger or of a similar age, has the same ball-playing capabilities, is the same in the air, is calm and... because I said it last time, I would love it to be Saliba. But I think he's shot his chance.
Well, really. If Luis signs this, which is heavily rumoured now, you've already got four centre-backs there. Now, logically, you would have at least five anyway, certainly Arsenal. But that's why we've kept Chambers around, even though Mustafi, Socrates, and one other I can't think of at the moment went away in this window. We still, kept James around because obviously seeing what's happened at Liverpool, you need five centre backs. So there's obviously that opportunity there. But the concern, like you said, I've watched him a bit at Nice, and he looks pretty good, to be honest.
He looks very tidy versus PSG.
I know. I think he had a little error for their final goal, but overall, he's looked really good at Nice. So you really hope that's your five, and I really don't want us to go into the transfer market this window. I'd love us not to for a centre back. I can't remember the last transfer window we didn't go in for a centre back. It would be really nice to not have to do that, wouldn't it? Yeah. So, but again, we don't know about that. I'm just more immediate concerns is I think he needs to settle on a first two pairing, whether it's his best two centre backs or not. I don't care. He needs to settle on a first two pairing.
Would you Thursday do Gabriel and Luis again?
Yeah, I would, because even though they had the the two goals conceded, I am never a fan of rotating. So. Or not in that position, like elsewhere, sure, but not in that position. But again, then that throws up the question: Are you going to play these players three times in a week?
Even with Holding being rested, you're still going to do Gabriel Luis.
I don't think he will, though. I think he'll switch. I think he'll bring Holding back in and rest one of them. I don't know which one he'll rest. I don't know which one he'll rest. But I think he probably will bring Holding back in. It throws up what's going on with Mari. But again, Mari needs he needs a game or two to get fit, doesn't he, Mari? Because he's been out a little bit of time. And I'm not sure where that game's not there yet. So I don't know. I don't see it happening yet. I thought it might be the Leeds game, to be honest. But it wasn't. So I think though I probably would stick with Luis and Gabriel, I think he'll bring Holding back in. And let's move on to that one before we start. I mean, it's a big game. It's in... No, it's not in Greece, it's in Rome.
Rome first.
And this is our away leg. I want to get your predictions on it. Hopefully do another one. I don't think we've got any major questions this week, so I'll go to that. I want to get your prediction on it, but how do you think we'll line up for that game? Because I do expect us to rotate two or three just because you've got City on Sunday.
Yeah. There's still murmurs about Tierney potentially playing in this one from what I saw. So if he's fit, then yeah, sorry. I like Cedric. I think Cedric did very well, like you said, in the against Leeds. But yeah, he's the one who makes way for me. I've said it before, Hector Bellerin's always going to get picked. So don't even. until he leaves or we get
until he's sold in the summer.
Yeah, he's there. So yeah, obviously I'll go with you and say Luiz and Gabriel as well, even though Holding got dropped out. I'll stick with them too. Xhaka and Ceballos in the middle, obviously, and then I'd do Smith Rowe. And you can't drop a man who scored a hat trick, so I would probably do Aubameyang, Lacazette and Saka. I think even though, like I said about Pepe, I think Pepe will have to wait again because I think Aubameyang will probably have to go on the left. I think Lacazette, you need Lacazette for this game. Benfica, I don't know too much about them. Truth be told, I don't watch a lot of Portuguese football.
They're fourth in the league. I want to say they were on the brink of sacking their manager at some stage, yes, but I don't think he did get sacked.
I believe he's very close. He's very close.
Fourth in the league. They dominated the game they played at the weekend, but they drew 1-1. It's about all right. And I know they've got Otamendi at centre back. That's about where I'm at.
They got him in for Tongan, haven't they?
Oh, they got Vertonghen as well.
Yeah, they got Vertonghen as well. Yeah, so I believe they've got Pizzi as well, who's their main sort of creative type of midfielder. He's the guy that we need to look out for because he's the one who mainly makes them tick and does everything. But when I watched the Arsenal highlights, they showed when they played Rangers, and to me they didn't look that special. Now, I don't want to give it the kiss of death, obviously, before it comes to it, but I think we got more than enough to be able to beat them. So, have you got a list of questions, or did you just want to do
it? No, not this week. I don't know if I asked for them or not. I don't know if I did, but give me your prediction.
I'm gonna be bold. I'm gonna say 3-1.
3-1
us.
Well,
yeah, 3-1 us, and then I'll go Aubameyang. It's the safe bet after that.
Definitely start for sure.
Yeah.
That's an argument there. So you're saying bring Lacker in, and maybe Tierney. And was that your only two changes? I think they were.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I think Pepe will start. I just don't know how, but I think Pepe will start this one maybe. Mm. I think it's 50-50 on Odegaard or Smith Rowe. I don't know whether he'll just play one of them. I think that's possible. I don't think he'll... I actually kind of hope he doesn't play Tierney, because unless he's absolutely ready with a full kind of week or 10 days of training in him, I don't want to see him, just simply because of the constant repeat injuries with him and Partey. I'd just like to see him, 100%.
Would you do Saka, Aubameyang and Pepe? Would you keep Aubameyang down the middle and then have
I think it'll work. I'd like to bring Laka back in, but I wonder if maybe the weekend might be there for that. But because I think at the weekend our chance is going to be few and far between, and what you probably want is your two top goal scorers on the pitch.
Yeah.
I don't know that. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. But I would bring Pepe back in. I'd like to see Odegaard start again, because I feel like Smith Rowe looks leggy a lot towards the end of games, even though it looks great. And that would be about it, really, changes wise for me, though I do think Holding will come back in at centre back. And I'll go for 2-1, and I'll go Saka first goal score.
Yeah, the away goals are important regardless of how it's all
it's still existing, isn't it, it's still there. And it's interesting how we're going to approach this game, like mentally. It's incredible to think that, and not, you know, it just happens, but people think Tottenham have got Wolfsburg. They haven't got Wolfsburg. They've got a team in Austria called Wolfsburger. And this team in Austria is way lower in the league than Rapid Vienna, who finished third in our group table. So I don't know how they've got it. Mourinho's got something about getting the draws, hasn't he? Because he doesn't get tough draws in like cups. It's just something he does. My dad was going, I got Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg's a tasty. I went, it ain't Wolfsburg.
Yeah.
It's a different Wolfsburg. It's Wolfsburger. Yeah. And they're in Austria and they're sixth in their league.
Yeah. But who was it that they played in the group stage?
Antwerp.
That was it. Yeah. They gave him some.
Yeah, but yeah, you never know. You never
Pialini, know. It's the history of the Tottenham, isn't it?
Yeah. And they aren't in a great shape, so it wouldn't shock me. Fingers crossed. Is everyone playing at neutral venues, are they? Or is there some places that just
No, it's because of the UK travel restrictions, isn't it? I think there's a Portuguese variant, so
There's a variant everywhere. Jeez. Like we said on the last one, it should have been one leg, to be honest. But we've got to deal with it. Everyone's got to deal with these circumstances.
I think as it goes towards more of the later rounds, it's going to be.
Yeah,
so that's why I'm like, that's why I'm like, win these, because when it becomes one off, that suits us big time.
Yeah, I like the FA Cup. Yeah, absolutely. But fingers crossed, mate. One win in the league doesn't really put us back in contention, I wouldn't say as such. I'm not really looking at anything. I feel like we're so far behind. But but it was a game that I didn't expect us to win after the two before it.
So
it was a great performance. So another performance like that on Thursday, and we'll do just fine, I'm sure of it. So, mate, thank you so much. Up the arsenal. I'll see you after Thursday, maybe Friday. I'll get you on if you can wake up for me at the end of it. We're always happy as long as Arsenal win, we'll be happy.
Yeah. We'll see how the game goes.
Yeah, we'll wake up. Oh, I'm back on that one. All right, up the Arsenal. Yeah,